This week in Retronauts, can you see the sun is shining on me? It makes me feel so free, so alive. It makes me want to survive.
Wow, that was the exact cadence of the disgraced TV presenter doing the rap. Barrymore! And I'll see you when you get there.
Okay.
I got there eventually.
Yep. Well, that's going to land with our US listeners. That's going to be
put that in.
That's going to be no. It's in now. Like you have fucked it, mate. You a Retronauts episode that has opened with a reference to disgraced entertainer Michael Barrymore. Am I therefore the Barrymore of Retronauts? No, I'm not. Let's not even go there. Hello, I'm Stuart Jip. You just heard Dave Bomber. He's a very naughty boy. And also with us is Shemin McDonald. Hello, Shay. How are you?
Hello.
And
hello, it's me.
I don't know. This probably is no surprise to you whatsoever for multiple compelling reasons. We're going to be talking about. Hang on. Sorry. A Sonic today. We're talking about Sonic.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I know, right? Here we go again. Now, what I wanted to talk about today is I wanted to sort of do a set the record straight for the youngins, you know, the millennials in this new woke world. There is a compulsion with Sonic fans. There is a current thing with Sonic fans where the phrase, by all means jump in on this if I'm wrong, but the phrase Sonic had a rough transition to 3D is held up as this sort of weird, I don't know, totem to like bad journalism or something, or like just like disingenuousness. Now, the thing is, Sonic did have a rough transition to 3D, and the evidence people provide to say that it didn't generally ignores the Saturn. They'll go like, excuse me, but Sonic 3 and Knuckles was a huge success, and then so was Sonic Adventure, so what are you talking about? And it's like, my friends, you don't. There's a fair few years in the middle of that, of floundering.
I feel like maybe sometimes we just needed a reality check.
Yeah.
And we just need to cut to the quick.
Yeah.
Sonic was good, and now he's shite, and he needs to get over that.
Yeah, or just, you know, another option is just to simply end. No more Sonic ever. You know, we'll weigh it up, you know. Could be good for them, could be profitable. Just, you know, get rid of Sonic and then withdraw all the Sonic stuff and, like, never release it again. Sonic in a few years becomes cultural detritus. We never have to hear about it. The fans are too embarrassed, so there's no more fandom. The hacking stops. I don't know, nobody even plays the old games anymore. And we're finally free.
Do you know what else makes me
feel? But the porn endures, Shay. The porn will endure. The porn will never die. It will be around forever. What were you going to say, my friend?
Well, like, what I would like to not so much correct you on, because I believe that you're right.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But I think there is a lot of frustration in the Sonic community about so many articles and videos and everything opening up with the phrase, you know, it's something along the lines of Sonic had a rough transition into 3D.
Yeah.
I do understand the frustration, but in a lot of cases, I think it's relevant context. Mm-hmm. You kind of need to say that part. But the problem is with the way that the internet works now, where like information is not so much shared as it is thrown around like a weapon.
Yeah.
That has morphed into anybody saying something that I think is patently true. And I was kidding about Sonic being bad and now it's good. That was a joke. But it was a rough time. It was a rough time from Sonic going from these critically acclaimed blockbuster games into games with, let's be honest, more mixed reception even before you get to Sonic Heroes.
I mean, like, yeah. I look back and I think, like, when you look at Sonic as a success story with Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic 2, 3, you know, 3 and Knuckles, like, I mean, there were plenty of Sonic games coming out around that that weren't as hot, like Super Sonic Spinball, which I do like, but it's beta, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the 8-bit games like Sonic Chaos, just not very good to me.
And the B tier, there's a big gap between A and B in the case of Sonic 3 and Knuckles versus, you know, Sonic Spinball. And even something that we, you know, quite like, you know, Mean Bean Machine. That's a fun game, but it is a different game reskin. So that also
something I want to just make clear personally is, you know, I don't think Sonic really ever recovered from the Saturn era. Not really. Maybe as a sales thing. Maybe as a recognized franchise. Because I mean, it's more popular than ever, I would say. Yeah. Maybe not quite so prominent culturally, but kids love the fucking twat, you know? but the thing is, like, even though I think that, you know, Sonic is kind of a hot mess as a series, and, you know, I think that's reasonable to say that. I mean, any series where you have to have both a classic and modern Sonic, and then you have to, like, deal with them being around, you know? that's a disaster as far as I'm concerned. A game... that's Sonic Frontiers, spoiler, so I won't give it. But recently there was a thing in Sonic Frontiers which was a diversion from something that they... That basically something happens that they already did, but they don't call it the same thing. They change it. And it's like, what's happening here? Like, you had an open goal there. And you just missed it. You just completely like went whiffed it. But no, I'm not saying that I think all Sonic games now are shite. I think that I play them a lot. I like the Sonic. I like Sonic. I think that it's good. Otherwise, I wouldn't do podcasts about it. But there is definitely a degree of like, what the hell are we doing? Throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, and then when it does stick, ignoring it and not building on it in any way. And then doing
That's what it is. It's that we remember this progression of some of the best games. Like, you can take 1, 2, 3 Knuckles, and you can look at them all and go like, well, this bit was better in that, and that bit was better than this. But they were all phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And they were all phenomenally popular. And it was like, the next one, oh, it's going to be great. Oh, the next one, yes, it's great. The next one, yes, it's great. And it was after that, immediately from the pinnacle of 16-bit gaming, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, one of the best games anyone's ever made, the next one was such a disaster that it was never released. And that is worth talking about.
Are you talking about Sonic Crackers?
Yes.
Sonic Crackers.
And it was, and it has ended up in this situation where, yeah, a Sonic game isn't one thing now. They'll just do whatever. And if you were, you know, if you're young and that's the world you've lived in, and to you, it's always been Sonic is just anything with this guy in. It can feel probably weird when we go like, "Whoa, it was a rough transition through D," but it was, and it was an interesting enough time to talk about. Is the thing?
I mean, I just remember I wrote an article about this for Nintendo Life a while back, or at least covered it in brief. And it was probably the second most I've ever been yelled at on the internet by enormous number of people because I used the phrase "Sonic Heroes was toilet."
That it was.
I stand by that. And the thing that surprised, that was my, I've talked about this before, but that was my moment when I realized I was old in the fandom because the entire perspective has shifted and the people now grew up with that game. I grew up with the original games. So very different perspective. There's nostalgia isn't really there for Sonic Heroes and such.
Yes, but it's not merely, this is something me and Chris talk about on STTP a lot. There is a difference between...
What is STCTP for the listener's benefit, Dave?
That's my Sonic-based podcast.
They know already, Sonic-related podcast. Very good podcast,
Where it is true that when you're the ages of, like, 11 to 14, you just get into anything because you're a kid and you're blind to, you know, the fact that you're being marketed to and all this.
I was into Pogs.
You'll love it for the rest of your life.
I love Pogs.
Yeah, same. Collectible circles, same.
If they brought Pogs back, I'd probably buy them.
Yeah, probably. As long as it had the same artist, you know.
I'm a sucker for Pogs, man.
But, like, so it is true, and people aim that at you. Like, it's just your nostalgia versus that person's nostalgia. Yeah. But though, there are things in the world that are better than other things. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be 11 to 14 when one of the things that was really actually good came out, then it's not just nostalgia anymore that's making you say Sonic 3 and Knuckles was good.
But it's also the level of perspective of being like, this is how it was when it was me in the fandom, when I was fully in there, when I was on the forums and doing this. This was the gospel. It was this. These games are good, these games are bad. Like, this is known. Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic Heroes sucked. It was a huge disappointment. No one likes it. Shadow the Hedgehog, even worse. And I'm not saying that people can't enjoy these games. I'm saying that from the perspective of someone who was there since literally Sonic didn't exist, yes, there was a period of history when it didn't exist, and it was a utopian period of history, I have to say. It don't look good for Heroes, but we're not here to talk about stuff that late. We're going to talk about the second phase of the Sonic Cinematic Universe, Game-O-Matic Universe, because following Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which we've done 5 glorious episodes on, it is imperative that we present our case for this rough transition to 3D, and why saying that is not necessarily something that should upset you. Like,
no,
you really shouldn't be upset.
We're not just gonna dump on this time. No. Like, there's loads of really interesting, good stuff that we liked from that time.
Yes,
sometimes rough can be fun.
Yeah, it's absolutely true, and you'll find out all about that when you grow up, kids. Wow. So where do we start? Following Sonic 3 and Knuckles, there's 3D is the big thing. 3D games, PlayStation, Saturn, to some extent the Atari Jaguar CD. 3D games with polygons instead of sprites. To a very limited extent, indeed, yes. And Sega... what was that show?
Can I just establish like a bit of a timeline here?
Yeah, by all means. Yeah, very sensible.
Okay, so the year is 1996, in November 1996.
Tail end of 1996, you know, even.
By this point, Super Mario 64 had already been released for the Nintendo 64. Mm. Crash Bandicoot had been released for the Sony PlayStation by this point.
Christ.
You know, two absolute heavy hitters, both taking the 3D platformer in different directions. You know, one's kind of more explorative and the other one's more linear, kind of like Sonic. So where was our intrepid blue hero at this point in history?
He was
fucking releasing Sonic 3D Flicky's Island, wasn't he?
Yeah, Sonic 3D Blasts or Sonic 3D Flicky's Island on the Mega Drive. Now, the Mega Drive version is the one that I personally had spent time with. Sorry. The Saturn and PC versions are somewhat different, and I think, Shay, they're the ones you're familiar with.
Yes.
So I think this could be interesting to make the sort of comparison. Now, Sonic 3D, if you're not familiar with it, it is an isometric action game. Action slash maze game, I think I'd call it. Developed by Traveller's Tales, who are well known by this point for making games that really do push the Mega Drive, the 16-bit systems, like Mickey Mania and Pugsy, which are remarkable-looking video games, for sure. And when Toy Story, I think it was out by now as well, and that was incredible for the Mega Drive. But Sonic 3D, let's get the cat out of this. You know, let's put the cat amongst the pigeons. It's not 3D, is it? Like, it's just clearly not 3D in any respect. It's an isometric. It's head over heels. It's head over friggin' heels, isn't it?
It's head over heels, presented to look like it's also 3D polygons, but it isn't. It's a Donkey Kong Country.
And it looks tremendous. I love the look of this game.
Yeah.
Both on Mega Drive and Saturn. Now, Saturn, the main difference visually, I think, is it's got more quasi-realistic textures on everything. So it does give the game a very different look while retaining the same basic gameplay.
And it has that mist as well.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Fancier graphical effect owing to the superior hardware.
Yeah, well, can I just say one of my favourite slices of video games is when you get a 16-bit game that's been released on a 32-bit console, so you're basically just getting a fun platformer that just looks ace. Like stuff that came out on the Mega CD and stuff like that. I love that. It's like I'm playing Chuck Rock, except the music is like CD music, so it's just like a little bit more cool. Man, Chuck Rock 3D, we got robbed. Should have happened anyway. Save it for the Chuck Rock episode, which I'm definitely not doing. Sonic 3D, what you do in that game is, unlike, very much unlike previous Sonic games, you move around these isometric stages, you bop enemies, and you pick up flickies. They're inside enemies, aren't they?
Yes.
You break
flicky
the
is a small bird.
Yeah, Flicky is a small bird, who you may know from the arcade game Flicky, also released on the Mega Drive, one of my favourite Mega Drive games, Flicky.
You have to picky, licky, roll them up in Flicky.
Nice. Now, when you collect five of these flickies will follow along behind you in like an obedient little chain. And if you collect five of them, you take them to the big ring at the exit and you release them, and that lets you proceed. I think because it would be quite difficult to design linear stages that had sort of platforming, because this is much more of a maze game than a platformer. There is some platforming, but yes, because of the awkward perspective, it's really more focused on exploration, and as well as finding flickies, you've also got to find, you know, rings, power-ups, and then you'll take these rings to Tails, who's just standing around, or Knuckles, who's just standing around. That's all they do, they just stand around. Give them 50 rings, they'll let you play the special stage to get an emerald, and they're different on all three systems. There are three different special stages. I'm not going to talk about them right now, but I just want to get the game loop is find five flickies, go to the exit. Sometimes you need to find five more flickies, and there's like another half of the level. Now, the problem I have with this game, with respect, this may not be a problem on the Saturn and PC versions, which I believe have save feature. The Mega Drive version, there is no such save feature, and this game is very long. There are lots and lots of levels. They are not easy, and they are not, they're not simple to navigate. Of course, you could cheat by either putting in the Barracuda code or just kicking your Mega Drive when the cartridge is in, which somehow, I think it's because when there's an error, it automatically goes to the cheat menu. That's like the
error response. Was it John Burton?
John Burton, the Mega Christian, yeah.
Well, what happened was that I think it was Sega would basically only test if it crashed under certain stimulus. So what he did was he rerouted it so that anything that would cause a crash would just reroute to the level select menu. Since it wasn't technically a crash, it passed quality testing.
Amazing.
And so what it means is that if you rattle the cartridge a certain way while it's turning on, you'll be taken to the level select.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. It was true, and it was good, and it's a fact that I like about that game. But something else I want to mention real quick, because we're starting from the beginning, really, is like, if you play this on the Mega Drive, this game starts out with a holy crap, CGI cutscene is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. The first time you see it, you're like, no way. It's really well done. There's an interesting video by Sid Hyper-Christian John Burton, the developer, on YouTube, on the Game Hut, I believe, and it tells about how they managed to do that on the Mega Drive, and it's very, very fascinating. His whole channel is quite fascinating until you get to the bits where it's like, yeah, I hid my Christian messages in all my games. Like, if you dig in, you'll find some, like, psalms in them, and it's like, come on, John.
I have never seen him do that. I'm going to have to take your word for it.
John, give it a break, mate. Trying to have fun.
The thing about Sonic 3... Sorry, I'm not interested in talking about Christianity. I'm only interested in Sonic.
That's fair.
The thing about Sonic 3D...
They're kind of the same if you think about it, but go on.
Well, you know, Sonic 06, he did rise from the dead.
Yeah, he did, after getting a kiss from a maiden like Jesus.
Just like Jesus.
Jesus was also, of course, way past cool.
Yeah, he's alive and he's going to kill you.
From either of them, where's that from? I don't remember that bit. But right, okay. The thing about Sonic 3D though, that I think has, like, the problem that Sonic encounters going forward, and in fact has always encountered really, is that the very fact of his central gimmick being speed, it kind of hamstrings what he can do. Like, there was another 3D isometric maze game on the Game Gear, Sonic Labyrinth, and it's a decent little, it's fine. It's not great.
One of the most over-criticized, like, oh, it's so bad. And the reason they say that is because Sonic's got, like, stone shoes, and it's like, who cares? It's just play the game. Like, you know?
Well, this is it. But you don't play a Sonic game to slowly pick your way through a level. No. You play a Sonic game to go fast.
Yeah.
And this is the problem with Sonic 3D, is it's like, because it's in this weird isometric 3D perspective,
yeah,
Sonic is fast in that he is too slippery for his own good.
Yeah.
Like, his controls do not match the perspective.
No, they don't. No. But in a sense, I kind of like that, but yeah. Yeah.
But it's not about going fast. Like, you use the spin dash and it's basically a death sentence.
Yeah.
The only, like, moments of spectacle are completely pre-scripted.
Yeah, like when you go around the loops or when you travel between the stages or, like, the opening of Diamond Dust Zone, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and they're lovely little spectacles, but they are not interactive, really. It's the game has to take the controller off you in order to do those bits, because otherwise it had no way of using Sonic's raison d'être, really.
Yeah.
And so
cyber raison d'être.
I like that a lot.
Oh.
No one's going to get that
shit. If that's not worth $5, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. This is always going to be the problem. Because the other thing, of course, is that Sonic moves quickly, so you have to make bigger levels to accommodate that speed.
Yeah.
And it becomes a real bugbear. Like, obviously, they couldn't have done it on the Mega Drive, but I don't even think it was remotely feasible, even on the Saturn.
What was a proper full-on
3D? Yeah, a proper full-on 3D Sonic game in the style of, like, I would say that probably the PlayStation is more comparable in power to the Saturn, although I'm not 100% on that.
I mean, the Saturn was 2D. It was the 2D machine, wasn't it? Like, it was more apt for 2D games. Like, they didn't have to drop frames like they did on PlayStation. But yeah. 3D games were, while very much doable, hence Nights into Dreams and, you know, Croc, obviously. Well, mainly Croc. Obviously. I mean, Croc is top tier. It was more of a 2D sort of machine, but I'm not sure if Sonic 3D Blast really fits into that at any rate, because the Saturn version of 3D Blast is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more or less the same except for the special stages and the visuals?
Yes, yeah, it is. It's an identical game.
Yeah, the level design is the same, the bosses are the same, all that sort of thing. And I think that the interesting thing about that is Sonic 3D on the Mega Drive, when I was a kid, the really cool box art tricked me into thinking that it actually was quite impressive. Like, visually now I know it is, but at the time it was like, yeah, this game is obviously cool as hell because look at that box art. Look at it. It's stark and so awesome.
But then I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. Like, the whole 3D, like, I understood what it was. I knew it wasn't generating any polygons, and I couldn't have possibly cared less about that. It was... You know, I was still impressed by Donkey Kong Country back then, just having CG things. That was kind of... This was like a year after Toy Story. We were all excited at the idea of CG things at all.
So Toy Story was like everything that has CG in a game that they were like for years. Yeah, it's like playing Toy Story, or it's not quite like playing Toy Story yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was just, honestly, just seeing... I'll tell you what it felt like. It felt like... actually, this won't be a very good reference because this doesn't feel like this anymore. But back then, that episode of The Simpsons where they go into the 3D world, Homer Cube.
Oh, yeah, Homer Cube, yeah, yeah.
Like, now when you watch that, you probably go like, all right, cool. Whereas at the time, it was like, oh my God, look! And you would ram a video in the tape, in the video recorder to record this incredible thing. That's
You know what's the best? I'm sorry for the derailment, but you know what the best part in Homer Cube is
what?
Well, it's when Homer's in the thing. Don't jump on the joke, because I'm going to say it. Okay, that's directed at you, Shay. I'm joking, sorry. When Homer's stuck in the dimension, he says, like, I'm somewhere where I don't know where I am. It's somewhere I've never been before. And then Patty or Selma is like, the shower! And they both crack up. And they're like, I just think that's a really funny dick thing to say. Oh, that's just me. I think it's hilarious. The shower! I can't do that voice.
Seeing Sonic as a little 3D figure that you could honestly just turn round. Like, I would just sit there turning the guy round. And especially...
Yeah, you can finally see Sonic's ass. About time.
And especially when you could, you know, you would go into a spin dash And you could turn that round and look in, like, real, like, what 3D shape have they decided on for him when he's doing that?
It really was cool, like, at the time. Yeah. Like, it was cool. It's just that it's a flashy exterior that quickly gives way to what you realise is essentially a slap-together cross between Head Over Heels and Spin Dizzy Worlds.
Well, yes, okay, you say that, but I have always enjoyed the game for what it is. Yeah, I genuinely enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the game, but when did you last play through it to completion? That's what I think rather than getting to Panic Puppet Zone and going, nah, bollocks to this, actually.
Yeah, no, okay, yeah. I've done that very often, but further than that, no, quite a long time. Probably not since the 90s.
And that's not meant to be like, oh, this game sucks, because it doesn't suck. It's just like, same thing over and over again.
Okay, I'm going to, like, I feel like this may be a bit of a Sonic Heroes situation.
Yeah, maybe.
This was my first ever Sonic game.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Like the PC version,
the PC one. I played it
on my dad's laptop down in London. I'm going to say it. I think it's dog's eggs.
Oh, okay.
It's a bad game.
Oh, that's not what I was expecting you to finish that off with.
It's like the thing is that, like, even with the maximum nostalgia specs on, and I do absolutely, like, I love the Saturn Rusty Ruin theme. It is beautiful. It's based on Enigma's Sadness, which is a bizarre pull, but it works.
Yeah.
I think it's very atmospheric. It's not a game I can stand playing for more than a couple of levels.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah.
Usually I think I'm all right with perspective, like 3D perspective on a 2D screen. I think I'm okay with that. But like that, I can't be done with it on any level. It doesn't work for me.
Do you know, this came up a bit earlier. I am fine with it, and I kind of really like it because it actually is reminiscent of a lot of Spectrum games and things like that. So that's fine for me. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about earlier about the platforming. There's a bit like in nearly every level where all you have to do is just jump from one suspended platform to another one, and I cannot.
Yes, yeah. Well, like in any other Sonic game, there would be like pits below those, but there aren't in this one because they know how fiddly it is.
Yeah.
And it's there. Like the moment I remember as a kid getting scunnered with it was when I was in Volcano Valley. Is that the level?
I think so. Yeah.
And it's the boss of that bit where you have to jump on the pipes and then jump on Robotnik.
God, yes. That's dreadful.
Like, that even as a child who had no other games to play and had just bought his first ever Sonic the Hedgehog game, I was a big fan because of the comics and everything, I couldn't be done with it. I stopped there and I nary returned to it.
Mm. I really like the final boss because it's like Billie Jean. Like, you're running on the ground and they're all lighting, the towers are lighting up underneath you. Yeah. It's really cool. And also, if you had Sonic Gems Collection and you absolutely rinsed it, you unlock the ability to warp straight to the final boss of Sonic 3D and fight it. And that was pretty cool. And that's how I like to play Sonic 3D these days, just warping to the final boss and fighting it.
The final boss was really cool. And just because we haven't mentioned it yet, also a shout out to the Mega Drive soundtrack, one of the best Mega Drive soundtracks. Yeah,
well, that's the thing. It's a game that has two soundtracks, and they're both terrific. The Saturn one, Richard, I think you said Richard Jacques, right?
Yeah.
Who also will bless us with Sonic R soon. But you have your John, I don't know how to pronounce it, John Senoue?
No, I don't know how either. Yeah. No,
I believe it's Jun Senoue.
Is this going to be apocryphal, but I feel as if I heard that it wasn't as much a Jun Senoue soundtrack as we thought.
Oh, really?
Was it like
Mick Hucknall or something?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was Micknall Jacks.
Mick Hucknall's his like investigative videos on like this is the Green Groove music sounds a bit like Holding Back the Years.
No,
and therefore,
was,
Mick Hucknall worked on this.
What it was that I think. So this, you know what? I should have researched this, but I seem to remember, because I've always been really confused, right? If Jun, I'll call him for now, made one of my favourite Mega Drive soundtracks ever, then why don't I really like his tracks on Sonic Adventure? I was always very confused, including the ones that are just the tracks from this, but done on his synth at home, and suddenly sounding all bad. And then I believe it was on one of those Game Hut videos where he was like, yeah, he sent in a demo tape, here's the demo tape, and he plays like a version of a couple of the Sonic 3D tunes, but sounding very Sonic Adventure. And then we turned it into this brilliant Mega Drive music.
Yeah.
And it answered a lot of questions for me about some of the stuff I've seen credited to him compared to what I think Sonic 3D on the Mega Drive sounds like.
The demo tracks are on the Internet Archive. So maybe they could be put into the episode, wink wink. Yeah. So Sonic 3D, to be honest, well, I mean, it kind of came and went. I mean, it's on everything. If you buy the Mega Drive classics, like on PS4 today, it's got Sonic 3D on there, I believe. You can still play it. John Burton actually made a ROM hack called Sonic 3D Director's Cut for the Mega Drive, which I think adds in a battery save. It makes it so... Now, bizarrely, it makes it so you don't have to get the flickies, which I think is a huge misfire, because there's now no game.
What's the point? Hang on. Well, no, what's the point then?
Well, I know. He's added all this stuff, but he's put Supersonic in as well. But, like, listening to criticism, bizarre criticism from idiots on the internet to have said, oh, it should just be a straightforward game. So he's made it a straightforward game. Maybe it's optional. I don't know.
It is a straightforward game.
Yeah.
You collect the birds and you put them in the hoop.
John, you've made Dave cross. but I agree, it's too far.
Once again, another slam dunk for Sonic that he just misses.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about Sonic 3D. Now, that sort of came and went, sadly, but Sega, I guess, needed some Sonic on the Saturn, and their only option, really, at this point, was to throw together a compilation. And by throw together, I mean lovingly curate, because this is still one of my favourite Sonic ways to play Sonic. What you get, now we've talked about this with Lewis Clark, I think, on the the Retro Compilations episode, so I'll keep it kind of brief. What you get is Sonic, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, and Sonic and Knuckles with the ability to do the lock-on and play any of them connected, including Blue Sphere if you want to. And the menu is just super graceful. Like, you'll pick a game, or you'll pick Sonic and Knuckles, and then you'll pick the cartridge to plug it into, and it's all just beautifully done.
Nice. I don't think I've ever... Oh, no, that's not true. I must have had a go on it. I'm sure Abby had one. It's as if I've never played it. It's as if that's passed me by entirely.
The thing that I find the most interesting about this is, before we get into the Sonic World additional mode thing, is you can play the games as they originally were, but there's also new revisions of the games which have fixed, like, the bottomless pit in Mystic Cave, for one example. Not bottomless, I mean, the one you can't escape from.
Yeah. The bottomless pit.
The very bottomed, like, extremely bottomed, only bottomed. Stop giggling at the back. And also, like, some small, like, balance changes, new little things hidden here and there occasionally, tiny bits more of the levels. It's like Aladdin, the final cut on the Aladdin collection, where suddenly you'll just find a bit more level and it's really quite jarring.
Is that what that is? I played that and was like, well, I can't tell any difference.
Go to Aladdin the Final Cut, go to the first level, and when you get to the bit where you ascend above the city streets for the first time, jump to the left, and you can then run along the, like, rooftops back to the beginning of the level on the roofs and collect stuff. And you could not do that in the original game. It was not there.
Okay.
So the final cut of Aladdin in the Disney Classic Games Collection is basically Aladdin, but they finished it. They had time to finish it. It's extremely cool.
I'm getting back into it.
It's extremely cool. They fixed the collision detection and made it, like, easier and better. It's just a better game.
Great.
But this is kind of Sonic the Final Cut. I think also they are not emulated. They are ports, hence the changes they were able to make to them. But as well as that, you also get, like, an easy mode, which gives each zone only one act. It's like for babies. And that's quite fun. But the main draw of Sonic Jam was Sonic's World, or just Sonic World, which was a 3D polygonal mode where you are Sonic, and you run around this, like, really dynamic coloured, like, nice, attractive looking Green Hill Zone.
Yeah.
But it's just essentially a glorified menu for extras, because you'll find like a building which will let you watch videos, including that weird cartoon that nobody knew what the hell it was.
No, do we know yet what it is? Was it a pilot or what?
I think it was a pilot of some sort. I'm not really sure what it is.
I think it was just based on what it looks like and what I know about things, I reckon it was an animation studio's pitch. Like their audition piece.
That sounds likely.
But I don't know.
But as well as that, you can also look at like some pictures from the Sonic screensaver and things like just general like Sonic stuff, which is it's good. But you're also able to do sort of missions where it'll be like get 20 rings or get 50 rings or like find Tails, you know, and you can use Tails to fly around the room. And it's essentially almost like it feels like a proof of concept for a game.
Yeah, isn't the story that this was kind of some assets that they'd been... Not that it was a demo of Sonic Adventure, but it was like can we make Sonic run around in 3D environment that they had developed to make Sonic Adventure with?
Yes, there was, so far as I understand it, like people say it's like an engine test or it was like an early draft of Sonic. It wasn't, but there was definitely, they were both part of the same pipeline, I think is what's happening.
Yeah.
But again, that's really your only main 3D Sonic adventure, like proper 3D Sonic adventure on the Saturn. It's like one small, sparsely populated level.
This is the thing, and as we look back at it now, we kind of go like, well, there was the Saturn era and there was this big dearth of stuff and Sonic Extreme was supposed to be getting made and all of this. What it was actually like on the ground at the time was... it was like a slow admission that it had finished. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, is Sonic over? Which was really difficult to come to terms with because Mario wasn't. It wasn't going leaps and bounds. Mario, jump. but it had Mario 64.
Coins, mate.
And it just seemed like that wasn't going to die a death anytime soon, and indeed it didn't. Whereas with Sonic, it was kind of, what's happening here? Because it had also been, for a child, a long time since Sonic 3 and Knuckles, the last proper Sonic game. And it had been like a couple of schools since that came out. We were getting old now. And for Sonic Jam to come out, and you're like, what is it? Sonic's going to be in 3D. You know, you'd heard the little rumors. And then it's like, that's just a menu. It's just the games you've already got. But for you know, it's a Mario All-Stars, but for the Saturn.
I've never made that association, but you're right. It is their version of Mario All-Stars. I never realized that. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was... I mean, now there's all sorts of game compilation now, but then that was the one. That was the gold standard if you're going to re-release your games, Mario All-Stars. And the thing is, it wasn't even a Mario All-Stars. Like, wouldn't it have been... can you imagine Sonic 3 and Knuckles, but they've gone over all the graphics to make them Saturn native? Like, imagine. And they didn't. So despite those little improvements that they made, and the fact that now there was quality of life edition, if you want to call it that, of the Spin Dash in Sonic 1. Different people may disagree whether that's good or bad, but it wasn't much. And so to have this this museum of extra stuff was really exciting. And don't get me wrong, it became the basis of a lot of like the original Sonic internet stuff.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like enough.
No. I mean, the press at this time, speaking of the UK specifically, because I don't really know what was going on in America, the press at this time were very anti-2D. This is well known that it was a lot of kind of like, this is 2D, this is bollocks. Not so much, obviously, from the Saturn aficionados who were very sort of like, no, 2D is actually good because that's all we've got, so please don't take it away from us. And Sonic was still considered big. I mean, Knights was out by this point. Christmas Knights was out by this point, so you'd had Sonic running around in that. Shay, maybe it's worth talking about Knights, like you mentioned prior, for context's sake, because Knights almost came out and it was like, this is the new one. This is Sonic is finished. This is the new thing. This is going to be the big thing. This is going to be the Mario 64 beta.
Well, it directly competed with Mario 64 in terms of release window, and it's what essentially happened, so far as I understand it, is Sonic Team finished Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and it was kind of expected that they would, like, whether that was their decision or it was a marketing idea or whatever it was, they were moving on. They were doing new things, and their big project, the big one that competed with Mario and was supposed to be kind of the new hotness, was Knights into Dreams, which was genuinely one of my favorite games, not for the 3D sections. It's a game that is played in two parts. You play as Clarice and Elliot in like a 3D area, but basically you are told to cut that shit out quick smart and get into Knights. And so then you become Knights and you fly around. It's like a 3D environment. Yeah. It's that same 3D environment, but you are on a loop. You are on a 2D loop. It plays like a 2D game.
Yeah.
And that was Sonic Team's first big 3D gesture. A 2D game. Like,
I think it's pronounced Jester.
That's blood. Get Dave on it. He's always like this. I know. He's always like this. I can't tell you. It's bloody good. I tell you. I swear to God.
But yeah, it's not... Like, I absolutely adore that game, but it's not emblematic of a confident stride into a 3D space.
If I can make the comparison with Mario 64 briefly, because it does relate to the Sonic journey as well. Mario 64 comes out of the gate and it's like, everything's different now. This is how games work now. Everything's different. And Knights comes out and it's like, and I'm not having a go at it. It's like, this is a score attack game rooted in 1980s loop-based gameplay.
Yeah.
This is an arcade title on a home console, essentially. There is progression, but it's a game that you repeatedly play over and over again for high scores.
Even in just in terms of broad... You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. But even just in terms of broad strokes, it's like you talk to... Like, there's all the interviews with Sonic Team about their influences and inspiration. It's like, oh, we went to see Cirque du Soleil and we started reading Carl Jung. You know? And if you're a Wayne in, like, 1996...
Yeah.
You have three options. You have... Wahoo Super Mario 64, which needs no introduction. You have Crash Bandicoot, which is a hilarious little Warner Brothers cartoon that you get to play.
Yeah.
Or Carl Jung. Like,
Whereas the developers of Super Mario 64 went to see Starlight Express and then started reading R.L. Stein.
That sounds like a hell of a night.
Yeah, it does. Well, guess what else, Dave? Guess what else, Dave? They got a Korean as well.
I have to say, like, of the three, Knights may be my favourite. But, like, let's make no bones about it here. That is esoteric as hell. That is not a company who has a firm grasp on what they're doing.
Mm. Well, I remember Sega Power magazine, the magazine I read and occasionally go back to because I'm a weird little stuck-in-the-past gnome. They did this huge feature that was like Knights versus Mario 64. And it's like, well, I think Knights is probably going to win this, given it's in a magazine called Sega Power. But the comparison always, to me, even as a child, seemed completely absurd. And for Sonic, I mean, listen, going even further back than that, I mean, we're not thinking about like Ristar, you know, because that was another thing which was met with, oh, Sonic's dead, this is the new thing.
Yeah.
And it's such a misjudgment of what, I don't know. Basically, the point is the press was still thinking of Sonic as one of the biguns. Even yeah. though for some time now he hadn't been a big one, he was still Sonic. So you'd still get him on covers of magazines, even when there wasn't a Sonic game coming out. And Saturn yeah. was kind of coasting on this idea that Sonic was coming. It was like, no, it's going to be fine. Game. It doesn't matter that all they've released is like Virtual Decathlon and Clockwork Knight. There's going to be Sonic. It's coming. And, you know, eventually there was Sonic, and it was Sonic R. And that is different to not to normal Sonic.
Well, did we want to talk about the game that was supposed to be coming?
Oh, so this actually was after that, was it?
Oh, no, Sonic Extreme was before this.
Right, well, let's talk about that first then.
It was actually before even Sonic, it was about the same time as Sonic 3D.
Yeah. Right. So Sonic Extreme, which is a game that never saw release outside of assets getting leaked or revealed and things like that. I believe it's been what there is of it has been compiled, but it's not anywhere near like a finished game at all. Now, Sonic Extreme, I strongly remember this being, I guess not trailed, but teased as like, look, there's a Sonic coming called Sonic Extreme.
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
When we talk about Sonic Extreme now, do not get, if you're young and you weren't there, don't get the impression that it's just like, these Sonic games came out, this one got canned, Sonic Extreme. No. We were all on tenterhooks for this. This was Half-Life 3. Like, we thought it was coming.
This would be like if Bethesda just came out and said, like, oh, by the way, we've cancelled the Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah.
You know, it was huge.
Well, I mean, like, the same issue of Sega Power that I had about Knights had a feature about Sonic Extreme in it, and it was like, it's here's what we know, and you get the one screenshot with the weird fisheye lens look, right?
Mm.
You've got this drawing, concept art of Tiara Bobowski, who is this female character we're going to introduce in this game, presumably. Introducing a character to the Sonic fandom called Tiara Bobowski, just a huge mistake. Don't do it.
If anything, I think we were very mature about it.
Well, because, of course, like the Sonic fan base is very sexually repressed.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's even said that the word boob is in the name there. A boob, like a booby, like a lady's booby.
Yeah, it's all... this is going to sound like I'm doing an ironic joke. It was almost never brought up, and it is almost never brought up, and I just think we were all very mature about it in the 90s.
Yeah, until now, I've now ruined it on retro.
Yeah,
art, so
obviously, Stuart here has dragged us down into the mud, but
all
until,
the Sonic fans after this episode
Stuart.
Goes up going like, well, I never noticed that.
Hang on a second. Oh my God, this is huge. Rule 34 has changed forever. We have ascended to Rule 35. Now, it probably already is a Rule 35. I don't know what it is. Let's not look it up. Don't look it up. It's probably disgusting.
No, it'll be horrible, whatever it is.
Awful. Yeah. But, you know, it'd be funny if Rule 35 was like, be nice to everyone. Aw. But no, Sonic Extreme, it was this thing that was just like, we were on tenterhooks, it was like, this is going to be the one, this is the Sonic game for the Saturn, this is not a spin-off, this is the next Sonic, you know? Same articles got like, Sonic the Fighters arcade game, that's coming, but bollocks to that, like, this is what we care about, Sonic Extreme, this is all we've got, and it's all we ever had.
And yet, it's odd, because yes, it was the next big Sonic game. But we knew that the guy who made the Sonic games had gone and made Knights instead. This was known. And that was just a little peg put on that idea of, like, maybe Sonic's finished.
Yep.
Maybe that's it. And Sonic Extreme was being made by just someone.
It was being made. It was being developed at STI, which was the American branch of the Sega Technical Institute.
Yeah, who made Comic Zone, the Ooze, I think, and they helped out on the Sonic games as well.
Well, the thing is here again. Again, I have to keep mashing this point home understand. I'm just a brief. This is not chronological. This is not in detail. This is kind of like confidently remembered, but not at, like I've not got my sources ready for you.
Mm.
But some of the stuff that went on. Number one, there was a lady named Christina Coffin who developed the boss engine, I believe, for the game, like the 3D like boss arenas, because half of the game was going to be those full 3D boss arenas, and the other half was this weird kind of almost like isometric from a different angle fisheye lens 3D thing that genuinely makes me sick to look at.
It's awful.
I see it in motion and it looks horrible, and I don't mean in comparison to the big guns. I mean like it makes me feel physically ill. It makes me feel motion sick in the same way that Bubsy 3D makes me motion sick.
It's really bad. Like, I can't stress this enough. Now, I'm not saying that had the game come out and been finished, it would have been that bad, but it's not good. Like, it's...
No, and it didn't... And when you heard about, like, it's going to have a fisheye lens, because that is something that I think they used to say. And when you saw that one screenshot, all you ever thought was... Well, that won't be good.
Well,
like, this is the thing. What do you do in Mario 64? Explore Peach's castle. Oh, wow, I'd love to do that. Well, have you, like, fisheye lens? No, I don't love to do that.
Yeah.
So, but what you also had is you had this lady called Christina Coffin who was developing the boss engine, which I believe was in full 3D. And what she did was she made this engine. And then I believe it was the president of Sega Japan, Hayao Nakayama, who had a bit of a reputation. We'll leave it at that. And he came in, he saw it, and he flipped his lid. He was like, "This is horrendous." I think it was the fisheye thing that he saw, but he was like, "This is rubbish. This is bollocks. This is awful. Scrap it. All the work you've been doing, scrap it. Focus on this boss thing instead." So all of the momentum that they had built up, and rather than start the project from like a place of confidence, they started it, just kind of experimented, and then got told to can it. And then Christina, like they went on to work on Christina Coffin's like boss idea.
Yeah.
And I think it was at some point, to help speed development along, they got the Nights into Dreams tools.
Yeah.
Like, they got the tools to do, like, 3D stuff on the Saturn.
Yeah.
So, at this point, the game was slated for a winter 1996 release, because that was the time that there was a video tie-in with Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, I believe, and it was called, like, A Very Extreme Christmas.
Yeah, Sonic, that they then, Sonic Christmas Blast, right?
Yeah, it had to be renamed and released as Sonic Christmas Blast so that they could re-release Sonic 3D Blast alongside it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Saturn's big Sonic game, like its winter Sonic game, was now down the toilet.
Yeah. Wasn't it that, maybe it's apocryphal, but I'm sure I remember reading that also then Yuji Naka found out that they were using the Knights tools and he was just like, no.
Yes. Now this...
Yuji Naka, by the way.
Again, this was research that I did a few years ago, so if I'm mistaken, I do apologize. But either way, like it was, so far as I understand it, they got a few weeks into development with this new idea for what Sonic Extreme would be. And so far as I understand it, if they had been given a few more months to work on this, like at the stage they were at, they would have made it. They would have gotten the game out the door. The story that I've heard is that Yuji Naka hears about this and flips his lid and says, threatens to quit if STI continue to use his code. Apparently there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff there. Apparently Yuji Naka had a bit of a reputation of being a bit of a diva, and there was a lot of like rivalry between Sega America and Sega Japan. But either way, they're told, no, you can't use this code that is now the basis for like 6 weeks of work. And so apparently the end of this, the quote unquote punchline, the morbid fucking punchline to this,
they find out Sonic's not real. Sorry, go on.
Is that Chris Coffin spends? It's a matter of weeks. She basically cancels the rent on her flat, moves into the offices, and nearly dies working on this game. Like, genuinely gets pneumonia and almost works herself to death.
Oh God. Yeah.
Like, I mean, fair play to her. Is she still in the industry today? And honestly, what a trooper.
Good. Oh, brilliant. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
But if I've got anything wrong, please, you know, please do your own research. Don't use me as a primary source. But that's my understanding of the development of Sonic Extreme. That was the Saturn's Mario killer. That was the biggest gun that they had to fight off the competition with. Once again, that's not a smooth transition into 3D. Again, once again, Mario 64 comes out and they don't need fisheye lens. They don't need Carl Jung. They don't need, like, explanations and caveats and asterisks. Sit down, you pick up the controller, and it's like, holy shit, this is phenomenal.
As you've just made very clear now, does that sound smooth to you as a move to 3D? Like, I know you just said this, Shay, but I just want to nail it home. Like, listeners, the children, the millennials, whatever, in this terrible woke world. I'm sorry, I've got to stop doing that. I'm kidding. It's irony. That's a bit of, you know, because if you say something bigoted ironically, it's fine to do it. That's how it works. It's even though it's unjustifiable and completely, like, indistinguishable from actual bigotry. Let's move on.
Do you need stopping or are you okay?
No, I'm good. Sonic R is next.
Yes.
Sonic R comes out in 1997. And now Sonic R, in my humble opinion, is extremely enjoyable.
I agree.
What it is essentially them going, let's do Mario Kart, except with running men. Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Amy in her little car, which is awesome, by the way, and Dr. Robotnik, and a host of secret characters that you unlock by collecting coins spread around the course, or Chaos Emeralds, also spread around the course, which turns this from sort of a racing game into a sort of exploration racing game. And that's cool as hell to me.
It's the mechanic that people now will be very familiar with from Mario Kart, of finding the secret route, except it was, like, way more like in a normal game, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
Because you can jump and double jump.
So you can get over stuff, you can get round to secret places. I haven't played it since the 90s, but I've this sense that the secret areas just felt a bit more like, more numerous and more robust in some way than you would expect in Mario Kart, where it's literally just a shortcut.
Well, it's the levels in Sonic R were designed by Hirokazu Yasuhara, who also designed like the levels for the original Sonic trilogy. So that's why
that explains it. Yeah.
So that's why it feels so authentic to those Sonic games. The thing is I couldn't honestly tell you with no shadow in my heart that Sonic R is a great game.
Oh God, no! Well, the thing about Sonic. Sorry to interrupt. Sonic R, I love all of it, and that's about half an hour. Then you're done. Like, I probably could 100% this game in 45 minutes, and it's not even showing off. I think the first time I did 100% this game, I did it in about 45 minutes, and I was like, "Huh." I've unlocked everyone and done everything. Okay,
it's got a lot of let's charitably call them teething issues. Like, for example, like you say, there are five levels.
Yeah, four main courses and one secret one to unlock, which is really cool looking, to be fair.
And each one of those courses looks spectacular and has so much depth and hidden roots and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there are only five courses.
Yeah.
The controls are clunky. They're primitive, shall we say.
I personally disagree. I think they're fine. But then again, I sort of also get it what you mean.
Like
they're not what you'd expect from Running Man, basically.
No. It's not like playing a 3D platformer, you know?
Yeah, I think it's I'm used to it. That's why I'm saying this. Like, I can play that. I know how to control this game, therefore I'm probably just jumping the gun a bit, you know?
Oh, like, you stick me down in front of this game and I am happy as you like. Mm-hmm, but, like, but the last thing is that the balancing is all over the place.
Oh, God, yes. Like, the secret characters are basically all just objectively better than the main characters.
You are either absolutely, like, once you have unlocked Super Sonic, you either play as Super Sonic or you lose.
Yeah, and originally it's like once you unlock the first one, Metal Sonic, he's now the best character. You unlock Metal Knuckles, who's even better than Metal Sonic, you know?
Yeah.
The only exception, of course, is Tails Doll, which went on to be a very boring meme.
So it's got a lot of issues. I used to love that game so much that I would sit down and make my own Sonic R courses.
Awesome.
I mean, I would actually buy card and sellotape and stuff from the art store. And I would make my own little courses out of them, and I would make little Sonic figures out of oven baked clay.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's so good.
You're such a what a nerd. Holy crap.
But like
nerd alert.
And also I'm going to say it, genuinely really love that soundtrack.
Oh god, yes. I mean, okay, let me just like nail down Sonic R, I think. Now, what Sonic R is, for me personally, is it's a little just box of delights. And, you know, you get it, and you're like, oh my god, it's my favourite chocolates. And you're just like, oh, mom, 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 mom. And then before you know it, they're all gone. And that's what it's like for me. Every so often, I can go back to it. And once again, I can be like, yes, I love everything about this. I love the low poly visuals. I mean, they're not low poly then, but, you know, they are now.
Yeah.
I love the soundtrack with Richard Jerk producing these, I don't even know what genre I would call them, like Eurobeat almost kind of music. So.
They're the sort of 1992...
Living in the city, you know you have to survive.
They're the sort of 92 era dance, like da-dap-dap and doon-da-dap, those ones where it's like there's a woman singing on it, but it's also
dance music. It is Gouda, it's cheese, like pure cheese. But that's good for Sonic.
It's
like
good.
That fits Sonic. Is this the first time that a Sonic game was accompanied by a vocal soundtrack?
No, Sonic 3D on the Saturn, You're My Hero.
Oh, the credits theme.
Yes.
Well, but that didn't play during the levels though, did it?
Oh, I see. No, you're absolutely right then. Yes,
yeah, because
Sonic on the Master System at the end, he's singing a song through a microphone, but you can't hear it. I'm sorry. But no, Sonic.
Unless you can't work that sucker to death.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. That kind of counts. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like it's like almost proto Sonic Adventure when that became a huge thing, like a big motif. There's music, there's cool songs, you know? But Sonic R is like, it's almost impossible to define. It's a really enjoyable racing game that you should never play in multiplayer because there's literally no point. And if you do, you have to say you have to play as one of the main three. You can't play as...
Can I offer a little counterpoint to the thing about it being really, really fast? I found accidentally a better way of playing Sonic R.
Oh, yeah?
Which is, you know, that to some extent, this is how it will have been meant to be played, I guess, depending on the situation. But... So I didn't have a Saturn, but I got it on the PC when they released it on the PC, which would have been, 98?
Did you have the version with the music or the version without the music?
Oh, no, it had the music.
Yeah, it was the original release on Explosive label. Didn't have the music.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know. What's the point?
No, what is the point?
Yeah.
Did it have sound effects at all? Like,
yeah, it did. It had like the footsteps and all the sound effects, but there was no music. Yeah. Well, I still played the shit out of it. You know?
Sonic R.
I didn't hear the music till Sonic Gems Collection. I didn't hear the music.
Oh my god! Yeah. Sonic R is it's almost something to do while you listen to an album.
Oh yeah,
it's brilliant, right? But anyway, so I had this game and I had it on my PC and I played it a bit and it was okay. I didn't really get that into it, but then I was going to go off to uni. And you had to, this was at a time when you had to take a computer, but that was weird and unwieldy. You had to lug a massive 90s tower. So I got my first laptop. My granddad bought me this laptop. And it was, you know, it wasn't like great because it was a laptop in the 90s, but it could play Sonic R. And so I used to take it into school. Because I was, you know, in sixth form, and we had free periods in a social centre, and I had my little group of friends, and we would just pass this thing round playing Sonic R. And there was, you know, so therefore there was only really time for one little race each, and it didn't always necessarily get saved or whatever, but gradually we were unlocking stuff together and having this wonderful time at it. Like, I remember, you know, Matthew's unlocked Super Sonic. Oh, brilliant, well done. And we're getting all the, finding the emeralds, finding the coins, and really getting into it. And the thing that I remember that memory allows me to recall, which no other experience will ever allow anyone to recall, so this will be news to some people.
Oh, wow.
You had the option of turning the singing off and having instrumental versions of the music. And you shouldn't do that. But my friends did, because they thought of themselves as, you know, Ibiza fans. They were Ministry of Sound people, and they went clubbing and stuff. So they were like, oh, this music's lame. Let's turn the sound off. That's what we used to say in the 90s.
Yeah, this music is lame. It's not as good as Cancroft 100. Sorry.
And then...
I'm like the worst part of this podcast. Go on.
I'm not sure I know what you said. I'll find out when I listen back.
That's
to the episode.
Okay. It doesn't matter.
Imagine I do a sound of condemnation and we'll move on. Or a sound of laughing at a funny joke. So my memory of that is these little tinny thumping tunes coming out while we all just have a tremendous time together playing it one player, not multiplayer, but just passing it back and forth and just having... And it's great for that. It's a really good game to play with friends, but not multiplayer. Just competing. Just unlocking stuff together. Yeah. And as a... Not competing, the collaborating. It's lovely for that. So take me back in time to another world. Then you can be mine. We don't have to worry when you're by my side. There's nothing I don't know. There's nothing to decide apart from where we want to go.
Something that I find about it is, when I think about it, Sonic R really isn't a million miles from Sonic Adventure in terms of what I get out of it. Because Sonic Adventure has also got millions of flaws. Thousands, millions, so many things wrong with that game. And I love it. And I love it because of the vibes. I love it because of the music. You know, the kind of music, no disrespect intended, that I don't enjoy outside of video games, and yet when it's applied to Sonic, I'm like, yes, mate. Here we go. Crush 40, actually listenable in the Sonic contest. I went to Sonic of Sonic once, and Crush 40 were there, and they were playing, and it was genuinely the worst dog shit I've ever heard in my entire life. no offense. And I don't mean just because their music was bad, which it was. I mean the acoustics in the room they had was just not a live music room, so it just sounded like, basically... It was awful. Dreadful stuff. Sonic Adventure, lads.
I feel like I need to say this just kind of like as a segue away from this.
Yeah.
We are taking no pleasure in saying this.
Oh,
we are not sitting here like, haha, get it up, ye. Sonic was shite.
Yeah. No.
We've just all sat here and gushed about Sonic R for goodness sake.
Yeah. Love Sonic R. Love Sonic 3D.
Like, this is how much we love this series.
Dude, we haven't named a game today that I didn't like. Apart from Knights, obviously.
and for me, it's like, I don't like Sonic 3D, but I do like Knights.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all balances out. But, like, what I'm saying to you is that we're not sitting here like, oh, yeah, no, you guys need to be cowed. It's just, I understand what it is like to be a Sonic fan. I understand what it is like to be lost in the sauce.
It's awful.
Like... when you're sitting there and this thing that you're genuinely enthusiastic about just gets absolutely battered from east to west, just gets absolutely tanked online by everybody not in the fandom, and they're like, you know, your love for this thing is illegitimate. I get it. I understand.
Oh God,
and
well,
I know how frustrating
that is. I've been there and I've witnessed the, you know, the we've talked about it before, but the absolute disingenuous, like, hold right to win shit, you know.
Yes.
But, which is said by people who just don't have any interest in a conversation. Like, they don't have to have a conversation, but I think it's best that people who don't know what they're talking about just shut the fuck up. Well, yeah, I find if you don't know anything about a subject, it's best not to try and be, like, you know, authoritative about it. But
the number of people who are proudly declaring, I have no interest in this, but you're going to listen to me anyway. Yeah. I get it. Like, I do understand the frustration, but I don't think it behooves us to revise history in this way.
No, no. Dude,
I don't think it behooves us to say, oh no, Sonic was absolutely dandy the whole way through. Like, he sprung into 3D fully formed, because that's just not true.
Going from Super Mario World, or if you want, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, both in the context for best game ever.
Mm-hmm.
They're both in the conversation.
Yep.
To Mario 64, which is also in the conversation for best game ever. Like, they could not have knocked it out of the park harder. And I don't even like Mario 64. I find it unenjoyable. And I sit there and I go, I'm not worthy. I can clearly see that this is an unbelievably impressive achievement. Like, clearly. But Sonic, to go from one of the best platformers of all time, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, to basically what? Nothing for 2 years. Then Sonic 3D, which is just like whatever for most people. Then Sonic Jam, which is just the old games again. Then Sonic R, which is like clearly the most proof of concept as demo. It's like the length of a demo. And it's awesome. It's an awesome demo. I love it, but Christ almighty.
And then for that entire generation to end. That's that console generation gone.
Yes. And since Sonic's gone until 1999, you know, and Sonic Adventure comes out. And Sonic Adventure, it deserves a full episode. Now, it has been talked about on Retronauts before, but it's not been talked about by mental cases like us. So that's happening. Sonic Adventure, I think, absolutely crystallizes the lack of a smooth transition in 3D, because it's an awesome, awesome game that's held together by duct tape and completely collapsing in on itself. It has no central, like, point or theme or thesis or spine whatsoever. It's just a bunch of stuff crammed in. It's absolutely insane. It bears almost no relation to any previous Sonic game whatsoever. It changes fundamental things about the series, about the lore, that we've all come to understand in a completely, like, whatever, this is how it is now, weird way. Like, it's like a reboot of Sonic. And yet not.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most enjoyable games I think I've ever played, and I adore it. I love it with all my heart. Sonic Adventure, I love you. Sonic Adventure 2, go to hell. Sonic Adventure, kisses for Sonic Adventure. Mwah.
I don't, but I did. Mm. So let's say I do, because for all intents and purposes, at the time, I couldn't have been happier.
Sonic Adventure is like the movie Amazing Spider-Man 2. If it was any better, it would be shit. And I will explain that at some point elsewhere.
Like you say, we'll discuss this in depth next time, because I keep thinking of things to say and then deliberately not saying them.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I've been told to do.
But the a different situation, I feel like. The thing is that, like, Sonic Adventure back then, I just kind of, the general reception to that game was positive.
Yeah.
And I like it a whole heck of a lot. Like that. And this is kind of what I was vaguely gesturing at earlier, is that it was something that Josh Wallen from the Geek Critique said, which was basically like the Saturn couldn't do Sonic. The Dreamcast could do Sonic.
Yeah.
Like, it needed that grunt in order to actually even begin to attempt what Sonic did. Like, the speed and the size of the levels and the physics involved in everything, even with its issues, like, you simply could not have done Sonic the Hedgehog a generation earlier.
Well,
in 3D.
Do you remember, now, I'm sure you maybe still get this, I've had it burned out of me by life's cruelness. Do you remember the sensation when you were a kid and you got a video game for Christmas and it was a video game that you wanted?
Yes.
Mm, because you couldn't afford to buy your own video games at that time.
I have been chasing that high my entire life.
I remember standing outside Beatty's. Do you remember Beatty's, that shop? Like, everything shop. Now,
that's where I bought Sonic 3D.
I was in Lakeside, Thurrock. Shopping centre, very famous at the time, standing outside the window there where they had a big telly on and they were just looping the opening of Sonic Adventure, the, you know, Open Your Heart, the CG.
Yes.
I remember standing there, like, I think my jaw was on the floor and I was just, like, full chop. Like, I'm staring at this thing. I can't believe what I'm seeing. That the rapid cuts to Amy... Like, we said, through the music, when chaos emerges from the building, tails determinedly flying across the screen in, like, beautiful Pixar-level CG, and then that reveal of Sonic opening his eye, looking at the camera, and just grinning, and it's like, oh my god. I'm getting it now, describing it. I'm getting that sensation. Yeah. I'm getting, like, the goosebumps. And that shot of favorite? That shot of Robotnik standing on the egg carrier.
Yeah,
looking just like the biggest boss in the world.
Yeah.
Like, he's standing on top of this flying airship, which must be whipping through the sky at a fair speed. And just for no reason, he's standing up there.
Because it looks badass. That's why he's doing it. Oh my god, it's so good. Anyway, you can imagine how I felt, like, standing there watching that. And because the Dreamcast at the time did not just feel like, oh, it's another console. It felt like the future. It had these controllers with screens on them. What?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm still annoyed that that didn't catch on.
It could go on the internet. Huh? Are you kidding me? The games look like this. What?
The Dreamcast was practically an apology for the Saturn. That was, they were absolutely swinging for the fences. Just everything was packed into that console. Like, that it was so fully featured and so innovative in a way that doesn't really feel so much like spitballing as it was just like, everything is going in this.
I mean, here's how it is. I mean, we'll wrap this up soon if that's okay, but...
Yes, absolutely.
I first played the Saturn at a friend's house because the... Saturn, not the Saturn, bollocks that, the Dreamcast, at a friend's house because said friend's brother, the one with money, had imported a Japanese one. And it was in his house, and he was actually playing on the actual Dreamcast, actually. And, okay, how can I put this? You're looking at graphics that you normally only got to see at the seaside, at your house. You know what game he had? He had Sega Get Bass Fishing, because it was the only one he could get. And even that was incredible, because it was a... I mean, I didn't know about frame rates at the time, but it was a full 60 frames per second, smooth as butter. Gorgeous looking game, fishing game, I know. And the most unbelievably realistic friggin' fish that I've ever seen in my life. And he had a controller that was a fishing rod. And you had to swing the controller like you were casting a line. And then when you were reeling it in, you had to actually reel it in with the crank on the controller. Oh my god, it was incredible. And then when he got Power Stone, it became even more incredible. But that's, you know, that console, I cannot stress this enough. It didn't feel like the next iteration of something. It felt like the future of video games. It felt like that's it. Everything before this is bollocks now. Like that.
Yeah, it was a similar feeling to when
obsolete. Like the PS1. It made the PS1 look like dog shit. Okay.
It was a similar feeling to when you really connected with the Wiimote.
Yes.
And gaming was changing around that. That's what it felt like, but it was only there was only a few others.
You know, I still meet people. Like, even the other day I was talking to Ken and he was talking about how he didn't like the Wii Remote and the Nunchuck. And I'm like, I get that. But I'm saying to him, like, man, I cannot tell you how happy I was sitting there playing Mario Galaxy, holding a controller where half the controller is here.
Yeah.
Half the controller is here. And I'm just lounging around. It doesn't matter where my hands are.
You've got your arms spread out, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've got your arms either side of you.
It's so comfortable.
Why didn't that take off?
I know.
And sometimes, if you just felt fancy the difference, you put it behind your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they did the same with the Joy-Cons, and it's such a shame that the Joy-Cons like have such a lot of technical issues. Yeah. Because,
resisted the Switch Pro Controller for so long, and now that I've got it, I can't play with the Joy-Cons again because they're trash.
No,
keeping your hands by your sides, it was so good.
Yeah. But Sony's idea is like, no, what people want is they want triggers that are harder to pull because they're more like a real gun. No, Sony. Anyway, the point. Sonic Adventure was the return of Sonic. It was genuinely the renaissance of Sonic, and it led to this glut of Sonic games, which we will eventually get round to pissing on this podcast. But Sonic, I want. Sorry, Shay, go on.
But the thing is sorry, just to kind of like solidify kind of the thesis for this podcast, which is that Sonic had a rough transition to 3D, and he did.
He did.
The thing is that our ultimate big swing, our ultimate big bam, Sonic is back, triumphant moment is Sonic Adventure, a game that by all metrics is very badly maligned by these days.
Yes, it is.
Like, by modern standards, sorry. It's like, especially because, and I have to just say this for posterity, it's especially poorly looked back on because all of its ports iteratively made it worse.
Yeah, every single new port was
a worse version of that game.
Yeah, the DX version on the GameCube was just toilet. Like, it was just, like, awful.
And because there were so few of us joining the Dreamcast party, that's the one everyone thinks we're talking about.
Well, I play it on the PC with a series of fan mods to make it the Dreamcast version, basically.
Of course, you got it.
Yeah,
but what you've basically got is like the big moment for us is a game that is deeply, deeply flawed.
Yes,
like a game that has like I would say three characters in that are just not fun to play.
Yeah,
which three?
For me, it's actually Big, Amy, and Gamma. Not Gamma, sorry, and Knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Knuckles controls like a dream, but those levels, like, they are done within less than a minute.
Yes.
It's like...
That's interesting. I thought you were going to say that it was like searching around for the gems that took too long, but it's the opposite. It's too easy.
Well, because the thing is that the radar works properly in that game. But so basically, like by any metric, like it is quite choppy at times. They didn't quite get the physics right. It does often play itself. There's a lot of bits where I know not to press a button because if I do, Sonic will teleport 60 feet to the left and die. It's rough. Look, it's still rough.
You know,
it's still part of the rough transition to 3D.
Yeah,
it
is. You know how your mum is like just a flawed human being. Everyone is, right? But you and your mum, you've got unless your mum's dead, in which case I apologise. You've got a relationship that's very much tell about what came before for everyone, and. There are problems there. There's friction there, and there are things that will never get reconciled. But you still love them, and that's Sonic Adventure. It's my mum.
Sonic Adventure is your mum.
Sonic Adventure gave birth to me in 1987. My dad had sex with it, and he gave birth to me in 1987. And that's how it is. I didn't want it to be revealed this way, but it has.
but also, Sonic Adventure was this big hurrah, and we did all love it. And then they did not then iterate on its good bits moving forward, which is how it falls away in popularity distance.
We'll get into this, because we could talk about this for hours and hours, as you know. But Sonic Adventure 2 is a fascinating thing, because like it's objectively, and I hate saying that word, but it applies here, so much more polished.
Mm. Yes,
and so very different again. And I can barely stand it. And I'm going to leave it there. Apart from the final hazard, which is awesome, because it's a big lizard with a fucking spaceship up its asshole. And that's hilarious.
Well, this is the thing. We are giving this maximum possible benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah.
And we're still unable to definitively say, yeah, things got better from here.
This is,
or
exactly,
things were
that's
good
why
after
I mentioned
this.
Sonic yeah. Adventure 2, is because the reason Sonic had a rough transition to 3D became such a cliche is that it never really fully ended.
No.
Like, he's been in it these 30 years.
But this is the thing we alluded to very early in the show, is when Sonic Team do find something that works, they just can't iterate on it. They won't iterate on it. And for me, like, Sonic had a rough transition to 3D is, like, the first 3D Sonic game I played, because I never had a Dreamcast, I didn't have, you know, until much later, was Sonic Heroes on the PlayStation 2. And I was a big Sonic fan, and I was literally standing outside game with my saved up £40
yeah.
to buy this game, which had glittery, shiny logo on it, like an embossed, shiny Sonic the Heroes logo, excitedly getting home and playing it, and playing the first level and being like, I love this. Getting to the second level and being like, this stinks. I hate this. Mm. What's happened yeah. here? You know? And that's how it's been forever. And yet there's something that keeps me coming back. And you know what it is? It's the fact that Sonic is just inherently fun as shit.
Yeah. We're never going to stop playing them. This thing about, like, we can criticize these games and so on. And we can talk about this rough transition to 3D and it still being rough. But there's loads of fun to be had all the way across it. It's just mm-hmm. a question of what your relationship is with it. How you slot in and find those things. And to what extent the bad bits define your experience yeah. versus the good
and,
bits.
And your experience is going to be different to my experience, obviously, and totally. Dave's experience and Shay's experience. And, you know, there are people out there who quite sincerely adore Sonic 06, and I'm sure that yeah. their adoration is legit. I'm sure they do love it, you know. There are games that I love that no one else likes, like Bangers and Mash on the Spectrum, but Bangers and Mash on the Spectrum is better than Sonic 06, though, just throwing that out there. I want to wrap this up because, like I say, this is the subject that we could literally witter on about forever, and we need to save it for another podcast. Shay, have you got Hello. Any? Have you got any final thoughts on this before we all collectively go for a poo? One big toilet.
Nah, I think I've said everything I need to say. I do want to add, I haven't played Sonic Frontiers yet.
Oh yeah,
oh, right. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I think that you're very brave. And very lucky to have not played Sonic Frontiers. Although,
I'm
having
to foster
said that,
a healthy relationship with it.
Having said know? That, I would genuinely love to know what you think of it. Like, for legit.
Yeah,
like, I would love
genuinely.
To know. You know what would be cool, Shay? You know what? No, never mind. We'll talk about it after. We'll talk about it after. Now,
okay.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Shay, let's go back to you a sec. Where can our delightful listeners find you on the internet if they wish to?
Well, you can find me on most popular social media sites, Blue Sky, Instagram, blah, blah, blah. My username, I've changed it recently. It's now Shugles or Shugles _. If you see a little angry face with purple pupils, you found me.
As Shogles, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yes. Shogles or Shogles _.
What are you working on at the moment, Shay?
I have a YouTube channel. Mainly, I'm currently still in the throes of streaming Pokemon. I don't know if that will be the case when this is out. I'm hoping that by the time this is out, I will have released an enormous Pokemon Brilliant Diamond video.
Oh my god.
And I can finally have something else to say at the end of these podcasts. Excellent. That's my main motivation at the minute.
Excellent news. I'm looking forward to that very much. Mostly for the reaction, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be funny. It's going to be funny as hell.
It's going to be very funny.
I'm hoping I get a rise out of some certain people again.
Nice, good, I hope so. It's always good when you upset people on the internet. I love it. Dave.
It makes me feel potent and virile.
Oof. Don't I know it. Dave Bulmer. Where can our fine listeners find you and your fine ass on the internet?
Okay, well, most of the listeners will be able to find me at my Sonic podcast. It's called Sonic the Comic, the podcast, and you'll find it by either just searching for that or going to stctp.zone, which
is
easy to remember.
Have both been on it. Pure.
That's right.
Pure incest. Pure incest. Like, just completely
pure
incestuous.
Incest.
Yeah.
Pure incest. Yes.
Nepotism? Is that not the word? No.
I thought that nepotism was when you were, like, related in some way, which is also true of incest.
Yeah. So, there you go.
Plus, we are all related and we have all had sex. No, I'm sorry, that's not funny. Carry on.
Right, it's a podcast about the old British Sonic comics, and the reason that that's interesting, even if you didn't read them and weren't there, the reason you'll find it interesting is that those were really game accurate for the longest time,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, as opposed to Archie comics where it's all about the Freedom Team or whatever, you can find
the dismissiveness of that.
Well, it's just nothing to do with the Sonic games, whereas the British Sonic comic was, but also it was this sort of cultural window into what was going on at the time. They had reviews of stuff, they would talk about things that were on the telly, and we make sure to make you feel like you're there and have all of the context and understanding of what they're on about. We'll put clips in from TV if they mention it, that we'll put adverts in, things like this. We cover the adverts, all of the letters page, everything that's going on in this time in the 90s. And it's just a load of fun. You can find my socials if you go to the socials and look for Demon Tomato Dave. That's Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon, YouTube. I think that's it. Demon Tomato Dave. So you can find me there, but basically most of you are going to be interested in listening to Sonic the Comic, the podcast, and I think you should. I do that with Chris McFeely off Transformers The Basics on YouTube. If anyone listening is a Transformers fan, you'll know who he is.
Everyone listening is a Transformers fan.
There you go.
And listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode of Retronauts, or you would like to fund a different episode of Retronauts to get rid of this one, to expunge the memory of it, if you go to patreon.com/retronauts, you can find our Patreon there, which lets you there's a $3 level where you'll get access to episodes early, but the $5 level you'll get 2 extra episodes per month, like full length episodes about really cool subjects. I mean, one of them, because you'd think for the Patreon ones they would just be like, oh, there's all the stuff that, you know, doesn't go on the main feed, but we did one about Super Metroid recently and it was a 2-parter, and you know, it was really expensive and good, and I got in trouble on the Discord because I was playing Super Metroid while I was doing it, and it was really obvious because you could hear the D-pad clicking the whole time. and the Discord were like, Stuart. Anyway, yeah, speaking of which, you get to go on the Discord and, you know, swear at me and like say horrible things about me, and
to
I have no right
to reply.
Yeah.
To be fair, it is Super Metroid. Like, how are you supposed to put that game down?
Exactly. Exactly. And you'll also get, at the $5 level, you'll get Diamond Fights, Genuinely Tremendous, This Week in Retro Columns, which are available both in written form for the literate and speaking form for the sightless. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Stuart
Chip. The one that do those articles. They're like a diamond in the fight.
Thank you. That was really good.
Sorry.
No, it's good. You've played this out with a song, and I respect that. Should we do a rousing sing, Song of Living in the City, to play us out?
Yeah, living in the city, really,
you know you have to survive. You got to keep your dream alive. When everything is free. Something good. I don't know the lyrics.
This is very difficult because there's a slight delay.
We're going to sing it anyway. You know you have to survive. You've got to keep that dream alive. Where everything is free, can't you see? You know you have to survive. You've got to keep that dream alive. Where everything is free, can't you see? Oh, you know.
That's,
yeah,
that was great. That was great. This is my favorite thing ever. All right,
the
good
day
night.
I came home from university, not all the way home. The day I came home from a lecture, and the sun was blazing down, and I got into my little student room, and I slammed the CD into my player, and I put on "Can You Feel the Sunshine." That day will never leave me. I try and do it every time. It's the first really nice day of the year.
That's really
yes.
That's
what a car song.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Who's eating crisps?
Me.
David, are you eating crisps on the Retronauts?
It's a jelly bean.
You can't eat jelly beans during Retronauts. It's one of my main rules.
No,
I
wasn't.
I can hear you eating the jelly beans, Dave.
Yeah.
For gracious, that's so childish. That's so childish. I'm sick of this. I'm not having you back on again, you know. And you know what? We're doing an episode about your favourite thing ever, and you're not allowed to come on it.
I think we've covered them all already.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
Sonic, in listeners to my podcast will know this, but after a lifetime of absolute nonsense and Mr. Men albums and Postman Pat and all of this stuff, and like Sonic Adventure is the CD that my mum said, can you not put that on the car again, please?
Amazing. I love that. I mean, the thing with Sonic music, and I'm just a quick aside, is I've been playing Sonic Frontiers lately because I hate myself. And now the real reason is because I'm a Sonic fan and I have to see it through. I have to finish it. Like, I don't like it, but I really want to finish it so it's done. And I can say I can criticize it now, you know? Not that I haven't been shying away from criticizing it because I've been slagging it off constantly, but... the one thing about that game that I like the most is they added it in as a patch, is the jukebox. And as you go around the islands, you can find hidden musical notes. And when you collect them, you unlock a Sonic song. And they're from all across the series. So I'd be going around and I'd be like, look, you'd have the normal music, which is just this dour, like, slow piano, like, what are they thinking level music. And then suddenly you'll unlock, like, Angel Island. Or you'll unlock, like, Live and Learn. And it's just like, yes, mate. Yes.
Keeping in mind that your answer to this question could save or cost me £40, Stu, do they have Back in Time from Sonic R?
No. Or I haven't found it yet. Maybe.
Let's look this up. I feel like the listeners are fully invested in this.
Yeah, they need to know. They need to know.
Such a good song.
No. No.
Is it the 50s or 1989 or whatever? I don't know. That was Back in Time, wasn't it?
No. What the hell was that?
That was Back in Time from Back to the Future.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Then yes.
Did you get it? Because it's got the same name. So I pretended like it was that one.
That was good.
See, for a second there, I genuinely thought you'd mistaken the lyrics of the song Back in Time from Sonic R. It's like, is it the 80s or is it 1959?
It's 1959.
This is what I have to say. Like, whenever I host Retronauts, it's always very patently clear to me that it's succeeding despite me. On some level, I feel like I'm detrimental to the entire Retronauts experience, but let's not dwell on that too much, lest I get shit canned.
Lovely.